Reliability growth testing is based on the idea that whatever you discover through the development process, whether by discovery testing, margin testing, or accelerated life testing, or even just trying to get the prototype to work, and you make those improvements, that the reliability of the system will improve. And that's the basic premise of this. It's useful usually with complex systems that you're not going to get a lot of samples of, but you're iterating the design and its operating parameters as you work through the development process. And so there's a variety of techniques that allow us to model this rate of growth and make some reasonable estimates in comparison to doing so. The basic premise is that we have a test, analyze, and fix method. Build, test, fix is one way I think of it. But the idea is that you evaluate some prototypes, or you evaluate your first setup of your system, and you learn something that could be assembled more efficiently, something that could improve its performance or reduce the load at a critical area, or whatever. But you also find failures. Things just don't work as expected. And it's either back to the design board, or it's a variety of different modifications or adjustments. And that gets worked into the final design of the product. But in that act of doing the corrective action, you're inherently improving the reliability of the system. And so that's the basic idea. So Duane, and I think he's got a paper out that talks about this, and there's a variety of other practitioners that have different models and some named models after them, have basically used this phenomena of that it gets better as you make improvements with time, and found that if you plot the cumulative number of or the cumulative MTBF, in the case of the Duane model, versus the log of the cumulative MTBF versus the log of the system age, you'll get a straight line. Now, lots of things work out to be a straight line on a log-log plot, and this happens to be one of them. But one of the elements of this is the alpha, the exponent on the time. In this case, T, capital T here, is time or age. And that alpha talks to the slope of that line. And so if reliability in your organization is just part of the routine and it's not a high priority, but it's just one of the many different priorities that go into the design decisions of your product, you can expect a alpha or the slope of this line to be about 0.2 or 0.3, somewhere in there, this power law factor. Whereas that if it's a top priority and it's getting a lot of resources and every issue is tracked down and solved, you can expect a much higher alpha value. And so the basic idea is to, in planning, is do an honest assessment of your organization, or use previous projects and fit it to this curve and see what your alpha value is. Now, if you're not changing anything in your design process, that alpha will remain relatively constant from one program to the next. But let's say you're planning and you're changing the priorities from routine to above average, and you can map out what you should expect in the number of failures per progress through the development process. And then you can adjust as you find, let's see, I'll bring up my next chart here and my pen. And so as you're working through and building prototypes, and if you get a fail, and what this is just time, the system age, it's log of time, and this is just the cumulative MTBF. And another way to think of it is the number of failures that you're getting with time. But basically, if you're below the line like this, with where your data is plotting, you're doing fine. You're lasting longer for a given MTBF than... Is that right? I'm thinking of counts. MTBF is the inverse of the failure rate, so higher is better. Yeah, so let me back up. If I'm on the line or above it, double check me on this, make sure, then you're on target or better. If you go across the line to the opposite side, then you're lower MTBF compared to where you should be. The idea is that the line from planning gives you a target to go for, and you want to be on the good side of it. And I have to do a little thinking to figure out, mostly because of the inverse failure rate term here, as it throws me off sometimes. Well, be that as it may, it gives you a planning model and an ability to check your progress as you're going so that you can adjust. You can add more testing if you're not finding enough problems to fix, or you're not accumulating MTBF quick enough, that you can adjust by either adding systems to the test bed or doing some other activity to accelerate your testing. Now keep in mind, this is cumulative MTBF. It's not the MTBF from here to here, it's some subset time of your program, but it's from time zero all the way to here. So as you continue to increase time, you're also increasing the number of failures you have. So it's that total time, number of systems and the system age, divided by the number of failures all of those systems have seen. And so that's what we're plotting in this case. Right now, if you do get a curve, right, on this log-log plot, well, then this probably isn't the right model. In this case, we're assuming a non-homogeneous power law model, which has a particular form. And it allows us to model some kinds of situations. Now, this typically works in large, complex, repairable systems, but not always. So it's worth double-checking that assumption as you start getting data. Another model is the AMSA, and it's also called the AMSA-Crow model. Dr. Larry Crow has been a big developer of many of the elements here in the AMSA model, or I think all of it, and I got his name associated with it, rightfully so. But it uses an underpinning of a Weibull distribution, and it's only valid, though, within a test phase, not the whole program. So as the overall system gets totally revved and new components, new vendors, new elements and that get closer to its final setup get incorporated into the product, then you start over again. The time in the model starts over again. But again, it's a very basic type model where I'm looking at a couple of parameters and the number of failures over some period of time. But it's within, if I do a log plot of this, I end up again with that straight line. If I'm doing it on a normal plot, not on a log-log plot, what I'm basically plotting is a curve that looks something like that, where we're expecting it to take longer between failures. That if this is number of failures and this is time, I get this growth pattern, and this curve on a log-log scale is this basic pattern. And what I'm looking for is that this slope curls over, indicating that I'm finding the bulk of the failures. Now, if I remember right, there is a theoretical line that this asymptotically approaches, and that's related to your eventual failure rate. And it's more obvious when looking at the Duane model. Another technique is just to count this. Just count the failures and over time. What are your cumulative number of failures over time? And so this is on generally appropriate, and it's distribution free. It's non-parametric is the right term, but it works really well for repairable systems. So a few years ago, I got to work with a system that had a large number of escalators, the moving sidewalk that is a repairable and maintained system. And they were tracking how many times they were called out to repair, say, a particular escalator. And so what we did was take that information of the number of times they were called to do repairs, and we had a number of different escalators, and then plotted them versus time. And on this is just the number of failures, number of times they were called out to do something with that escalator. So after, the say, 5 days, they got their first call and got a failure. And then I'm going to just pick out some numbers here. And you get the idea. They got another call. Then it went a couple of weeks, say 3 weeks, and they got another call. And then they got a call the next day, and then a day after that, and day after that, and so on, and it was good for a while and so on. So what they end up with, in this particular case, just connecting the dots, they get a curve like that. But you can also just plot a straight line through it, right? If it fits. In some cases, the curve will bend over, indicating that it's longer and longer between downtimes from earlier on. Again, this is the number of failures or calls, and this is time. And that means the system is getting better over time. So as I change my preventative maintenance, or I execute corrective maintenance more effectively, or the system is breaking in, one or all of those combinations, the frequency of failures over time should decrease. On the other hand, if the failure is increasing with time, if the number of calls is becoming closer and closer together, the system is getting worse over time. So that reminds me of my car in high school that was pretty much near its end of its life. As one part of the system was failing right after another, it was just cascading failures. But the idea is that, say, for those escalators, is we went out and took a look at the ones with the increasing failure rates and spent more time with some senior technicians to find the underlying causes. In some cases, it was excessive vibration, which would manifest as failures in all kinds of different elements of the system. But by fixing the source of the issues that were generating failures, then it curved back over. It started to behave more like the other systems that were doing really well. So a mean cumulative function plot, or MCF, is just the number of failures versus time, and it allows us to get a sense of what's going on with our system and a repairable system. Now, you can also compare systems. So we had one that did something like that, and then we had another one that was more like this. And so by looking at the difference in patterns, it started to allow us to ask, well, what's different about those systems? Now, some of them were the environment. Some were outdoors, some were indoors. But also some of them were the maintenance practices or the brand of the system. And so we were able to do lots of comparisons because of the number of systems that were involved and the types of maintenance that was done in different models of the systems. So it allowed us quite a bit of visibility into what was otherwise a lot of unmanageable data that was inside their maintenance planning software, their CMMS software. So that was a good application for mean cumulative function, but it's something to keep in mind that if you've got a repairable system, just a very simple plot, Excel can even do it, of time versus the number of failures. So which plots and models are most useful? Well, I think it was Tukey that said that your plot should be as simple as possible. Let's see, what did he say? It was either Tukey or maybe it was George Box. I think it was George Box that said, all models are wrong, but some of them are useful. And the basic idea is that we're simplifying the real complex and highly variable world in which we live in some discrete way, and usually creating a very simple model to describe its basic behavior of, say, an escalator or a motor or a pump or an electrical box of some sort. And from that model, we're trying to understand enough information so that we can make good decisions. And that's what we mean by being useful. Creating a plot or a model that nobody uses or nobody's going to look at and make any decisions based on, well, do we really need to make that plot? Does that need to occupy our time? Whereas that if we're looking at, say, those escalators, and we're looking for which brand of escalator gives us a notably better reliability performance and maintains well, then those mean cumulative plots allows us to get at that. Back to the Duane plots and the AMSA-CRO models, those allow us to look at our overall program. Are we finding and fixing enough things that are defects in our product, in our system, such that we can, one, achieve our reliability objectives, or two, are we deploying the resources well enough to find the issues that are are no doubt within the system. We just need the resources to find them. So it allows us to, each model has its own uses and its own practicality. So it's being familiar with the group of them, and then for your particular circumstance, choose the appropriate ones. So next section, we'll talk about software. We don't talk about software quite enough in this course, and I suspect that it's going to become more important as we go forward in time, as more and more things are being done almost entirely through software. So let's take a look at how we test that in the next lesson.